All right, well, welcome to the Abuse Prevention Project. This is with your host, Davey Aiken. I'm here with Mr. Ken Kuhn. He is a good friend from our original church back at Harps Crossing years ago. We used to play at his church and stuff back when I was with the Aikens. And he's just a real blessing, and he has been doing an amazing ministry and a lot of cool stuff that he's been doing that having to do with suicide prevention. So when I started seeing that, I just thought that was so cool. And I started reading about the connections between suicides and people that struggle with sexual abuse, and also different things about technology and with kids. Basically, I mean, there's kids that sometimes will slit their wrist if their parents take their phones away. So anyways, Mr. Ken, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about your family, a little bit about kind of what you do. And, you know, I think the listeners would really enjoy the value of what you could add to the podcast.
Well, David, first of all, it's great to reconnect with you. I appreciate that. It's been a few years. Love you, love your family, and I'm just thankful for the opportunity to visit with you tonight. The thing that I do is a little bit different from what I thought I'd be doing several years ago. I can tell you that right now. I never imagined myself doing what I do today. It's suicide intervention 24/7, and if we're not doing interventions, we're training other people to do interventions. We've trained over 16,000 people now all across the country.
And, wow.
That's expanding even more this year.
Man.
My wife is a part of what we do. She continues. If I do an intervention with, say, a young teenage girl, then my wife will continue to follow up with her.
Awesome.
So that she does that, and then she does intervention in her own right. She's been trained now, and we've been doing this for going on 8 years with Armed Forces Mission. It's an organization that I formed in 2012. So we've actually probably been doing it longer than that, because I was working with the Army Reserve, doing it a couple years before that. So going on 10 years now, I guess, doing suicide intervention, and done over 1,100 suicide interventions in both military and civilian settings. And
you're on call 24 hours a day, basically. So somebody can call you in the middle of the night if they're struggling or anything like that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's happened quite a bit. And back in the early days, we had to figure out how to make that work, because that was back before Sherry had gotten trained. And if I got a call from Peachtree City Police Department, for example, at 3 o'clock in the morning to be down at the park, she didn't know what the circumstances were, and might be a veteran with a weapon. And so she was suffering a little bit from post-traumatic stress vicariously through me and what I did. And so we had to work that out, and that took a little bit of doing. And I want to share too with you that, you know, the reason I do what I do today is because my oldest son 10 years ago actually did an intervention on me at a time when I was having thoughts of suicide.
Wow.
And, you know, and that's another place I never thought I would be. I was always the Mr. Optimistic, and, you know, never met a challenge I couldn't handle. And and then I hit the wall.
Yeah.
And my oldest son, who had had 2 hours of intervention training, compliments of the U.S. Air Force, was the one who recognized it in me. And he could see through that Sunday go to church smile and intervened in my life. And so I have to give him credit for being used by God to keep me alive at a time when I had lost hope.
Wow.
So that's a huge part of it. And
I had not heard that story. That's amazing.
Yes, amazing. I tell you, it's My third son, it was right after my third son had been involved in a fire, had to be life flighted to Grady. And it was right after the economy had crashed. And, you know, I was in the real estate business, and I lost a banker friend and a builder friend and several other friends to suicide. And I had had several losses back even years before that, when Eastern Airlines went under, and I'd been working my way through college at Eastern Airlines. The year that they went under, I had six friends that died of suicide. So it was a tough time, but I can say that all my boys, I got four boys, and all of them have been able to do intervention now. My third son, who's in the Air Force, he was able to do two interventions during boot camp at Lackland Air Force Base last summer.
Wow.
And was able to help some recruits that were going through basic training. My two other sons, Nathan, you know, he's called me several times and has had friends that were suicidal and been able to help them. And then Tyler, my youngest son, he ran the AV for me when we were doing classes years ago as a young teenager.
Oh, okay.
And today he works with the Atlanta Fire Department. So he's actually helping me to open doors there for us to train the Atlanta Fire Department now.
Very cool.
Yeah, so pretty excited.
That's awesome. So when you're going through this, and you said your sons and you were seeing signs of it, so I'm sure some of our listeners would want to know, like, if there's telltale signs that you can kind of look for that made them see something that maybe their friend that didn't know, you know, what to look for. I mean, can you give a little bit of advice on that part of it?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the interesting thing is if you Google suicide intervention, it says, look for this sign, look for that sign, look for these signs. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think differentiates our training from most trainings is that we recognize that many times there aren't signs.
Mm-hmm.
And we know with teenagers and young people, for example, one out of five teenagers will never show any signs that they're suicidal.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden they end up dying by suicide, and everybody goes, wow, we didn't see that coming.
Mm.
And so what we train people to do is to recognize that the circumstances are the signs. You have a lot of clinicians who will say that circumstances aren't the signs. That's the risk factors. And I argue that these circumstances are the signs, because some people will not put out any signs. And so you have to be that speaks to community, right? Because if we are engaged in community, you know, we're going to be engaged in people's lives. We're going to know what's going on. We're going to be aware when someone, speaking specifically about teenagers, we're going to be aware when mom and dad are going through divorce. We're going to be aware when their grades are slipping. And that's a sign right there. That's a telltale sign.
Okay.
Their grades are slipping. We're going to be aware. Let's say they've got to move into another county because their mom and dad have gotten a divorce. And they grew up in a school district. They've been there for 10 years, and now in their 11th grade year, they're having to move into another county. That's a circumstance, right?
Right, right.
Well, it's any change. So what we tell people is any change in circumstances, I want to be drilling down and having a conversation with them. How are you dealing with this? You know?
Right.
Do you have any emotions behind it? Is it disturbing to you?
Right.
And because they may not put out signs. And sadly, you know, I have stood in line at funeral homes, and people have come up to me and they've said, you know, we didn't see any signs. Then you start doing a little bit of suicide forensics, and I go, gee whiz, if I'd known what he was going through, I would have been in a conversation with him.
Wow.
Regardless of the signs. Because it's all about the circumstances.
Right.
I say this all the time, and it doesn't make sense when you first hear it. You know, I've done over 1,100 suicide interventions, but I've never met anybody that really wanted to die. Suicide is not the result. Oh, no. Listen to this. Suicide is not the result of wanting to die. It is the result of loss that leads to hopelessness. And that hopelessness, you know, is so overwhelming that it short circuits our coping mechanism. And then we feel like the only option is to die. And, you know, I know that your heart and your goals is to help the young people and to help the parents of young teenagers. And, you know, a child who has been molested, that's a huge loss, you know?
Yeah.
That's a loss of innocence. That's a loss of themselves as a person. They've been violated. It's a huge loss. And so the fact of the matter is that children who've been molested, sadly, they have a suicide rate that's 200 to 300% higher. So what do we got to do then to mitigate that? You know, we've got to be engaged in their lives as the loving, caring. We've got to provide them with safety. We've got to nurture them because their resilience has taken a hit. You know, their spiritual resilience, their emotional resilience, their mental health resilience, all of that's taken a hit. And that's not to say, I don't want to worry a lot of parents that might be listening. That's not to say that your child's going to be suicidal, but it does set up the circumstances. You know, and so we create an environment where they feel safe, and we can help mitigate that substantially.
Now, let me ask you this. Have you ever met a person that, because this just popped in my head when you were talking about that there's no signs and that sort of a thing. Has there ever been times where you've met a student or whatever and they didn't even know that they were kind of going down the path of suicidal thoughts and think like it just kind of started creeping up like a slow fade? And then at the end, like, because I think self-awareness is so important, and a lot of teens and even adults that I've met are not completely self-aware of, like, really, you know, getting into their emotions, because they may be pushing some of that away. And what's it called when you get hurt by something or whatever, so you go to a different place?
Right. Well, you can be in total denial.
Right.
And I'm glad you bring that up, because absolutely people can be, think about it this way, Davey. It's no different from, for example, my dad. He died when I was young. He died of cancer. And the doctors had told him for several months, if not over a year, that he had a hernia, and that's why he was hurting. And it was a hiatal. They said, you have a hiatal hernia. And I'd never heard of hiatal hernias when I was a teenager. But I thought, well, that's what my dad's got. Well, come to find out, he had lymphoma cancer.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't a hernia at all. So he was unaware of the physical reality that he had cancer. And it was that cancer that ultimately killed him. And so if that can happen in the physical realm, then my question is, can it also happen in the mental realm? And the answer is absolutely yes. I was actually speaking one night at Harps Crossing, and, you know, this large youth group there, and the youth minister had asked me to come in. He's a Marine, had been a Marine, always a Marine, right?
Right.
So he knows what I do. And so I was sharing my story with the youth there, and I had this was several years ago, probably 7 years ago, I guess. And one of the youth came up to me that night, a young girl, and she said, I realized tonight that my life is at risk. That's the perfect example right there.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know, it's sort of like me and you. Let's say me and you are walking in the park in Peachtree City, and we see some guys on a bike or on a what is it? The golf cart heading our way. And so we step over to the side, and you notice 3 feet behind me that there's a rattlesnake coiled up.
Yeah.
I don't know that, but you know it. And, you know, so Ken, hey, don't move another step.
Right. Right?
What's wrong, Davey? There's a rattlesnake right behind you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. What'd I do?
Yeah.
Move slowly away from
it.
Right?
Right, right.
And it's the same principle. Mm-hmm. It's the same principle. So self-awareness is huge. And with teenagers, there's not a lot of self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And so that behooves us as parents then to, you know, check in with our kids.
Right.
And sadly, you know, a lot of parents will tell you, well, my kids don't tell me anything.
Mm.
Right.
Right.
Well, that's because we haven't created an environment where mm-hmm. they feel like they can.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I agree with that.
So we've got to create that environment so that they feel safe telling us. And I tell parents all the time, ask your children if they've ever had thoughts of suicide. You know, find an opportunity. It may be, you know, it's like other night on TV, me and Sherry were watching Law and Order. Mm-hmm. And there were three suicides in a 50-minute show, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a perfect opportunity if your kids are watching with you. Hey, you know, that's three there, right there. I know we've had to deal with that in our community. Have you ever had thoughts of suicide?
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good way to bring it up, because that's kind of the way I feel about talking to your kids about porn and sex, is to actually bring it up. And I think something that questions are going to ask, and they ask me this, not all, but some do, they're like, well, if you're introducing it to them, doesn't that mean that they're going to want to go out and, you know, get the porn and get it because it's going to do it? But I argue that if you bring it up and you make it where it's less taboo and it's out in the open and have that conversation about it, they're going to be more aware. They're going to, you know, want to talk to you about it. So if a parent was to listen to what you're saying and say, hey, I don't want to talk to my kids about, I'm not saying this because I agree with what you're saying, but I feel like there could be a parent out there saying, well, if I bring this up to them, what if that they never thought about suicide ever, and now all of a sudden they're starting to think about it? What would you tell to a parent if they ask you that question?
Well, the first thing is you can't put that thought in somebody's head. It's impossible. And the reason it's impossible is because every human being is born with a self-preservation button.
Okay.
We're going to do whatever it takes to preserve our lives.
Mm.
And so if you bring up the subject, you can't short circuit that self-preservation button.
Okay.
So if they're having the thoughts of suicide and you ask them, it's not going to strengthen that thought. What it's going to do is going to help reduce the stigma so that they can talk with you about it.
Okay.
And the fact that you're not willing to bring it up as a parent, it's so taboo, we can't talk about it. Well, then who are they going to talk to it about?
Yeah.
They're going to just talk to their friends, and their friends have no clue what to do. And so, you know, last year, I can tell you, I had 41 suicides that I had to deal with last year, just in 2019.
Wow.
And one of them was a 10-year-old boy. And so I was down at the Boys and Girls Club, talking to 60 kids down there, and four of his friends said, Mr. Ken, he told us he was going to do it, but we didn't know what to do about it.
Mm.
10 years old, you're not going to know what to do about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you take teenagers, you know, let's say me and you are best buds. We've grown up together. We're the same age. I know I'm your parents' age, so that's not true. But let's say we're best friends. We've been in friends since first grade, and here we are in the 10th grade, and you just made the varsity and I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, basketball, football, whatever.
Right, right.
And I say, Davey, I'm fixing to tell you something, but you got to promise me you won't tell anybody else.
Mm.
Kids do that to each other all the time.
Yep.
I'm about to tell you something, but you can't tell anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, if somebody does that to me, first of all, I'm going to say, well, then hold on. Before you tell me, I just want to let you know something. If you're about to hurt yourself, or if this involves anybody else getting hurt, I will tell somebody.
Mm.
Right. And so, you know, but kids, they're not going to do that.
Right, right.
They're going to go, oh, yeah, they'll be, you know, salivating at the mouth, wanting to know what's the juicy gossip.
Right. Right.
And then all of a sudden I say, Davey, you know, you made varsity. I didn't make it. I can't do this no more. I'm done. Mm. What are you talking about, Ken? I want to kill myself. But you can't tell nobody. Mm. And as young people, we think that loyalty means I keep secrets.
Mm.
Yeah. That is not what That's loyalty not, means.
Yeah.
That is not what it means. Loyalty means I keep safe.
Mm.
I'm going to, you know, so, you know, if you had told me that, let's reverse it just for a second. If you had told me that, I'm not going to keep that secret. I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure you stay safe.
Mm. Yeah.
So we're trying to get teenagers to understand that. And thankfully, I've had several situations where I've had teenagers that have forwarded texts to me or emails to me or tweets to me that one of their friends had sent out. And they said, what do you think of this? And I'm like, this is not good. We've got to get in touch with this person. We've done that on several occasions, just based on a tweet or a text that was shared in confidence. And so one of the things I'd encourage parents to do is talk to their children about what loyalty means. Loyalty does not mean I keep secrets. Loyalty means I keep safe.
Amen. Yeah, that's right.
And in regards to what your main focus is, that's huge.
No, yeah, definitely.
That's huge because one of the other things that I tell parents, you know, because we talk about this issue of sexual abuse, because it is a precursor to suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I share with parents, you have to teach your children, you know, first of all, let me just share this. There's not enough parents out there teaching their children what respect means.
Mm.
Number one. But number two, with my kids, when I raised my boys, you know, half of them know karate and, you know, they're tough kids. I taught them how to take care of themselves. And I taught them respect of adults. But the other thing, respect does not mean that I always do what an adult says.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm going to do what's right.
Right.
It's no different from, being in the military. You know, I'm in the military today. Now, I've got a commanding officer that tells me to do something that is illegal. I'm not going to do that.
Mm. Right. Right.
And I remember our good pastor Dennis from Harps, you know, he said, as long as I'm doing what's legal, moral, and ethical, you know, then listen to me. But if we step outside of that, then don't follow what I say do.
Right. Right.
And that's a lesson that he used to talk about all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've got to teach our children to respect adults. But the respect does not always mean I do what you say do. Because if an adult has ulterior motives that are harmful to that child, you got to keep this a secret. No, you don't.
Right.
No, you don't.
Right.
And we've got to teach our children and provide an environment where they feel safe. They can come to us with anything. Yeah. So that's so important. So, you know, for that parent out there that's worried that if they're going to put the thought of suicide in their child's head, they're not going to do it. You can't override that self-preservation button.
Okay.
If they're having thoughts of suicide and the self-preservation mode has been tweaked somehow to where they're thinking of suicide, then I want to be able to ask them that question. And because if I don't, then they're not going to feel like they can talk to me about it.
Yeah, right.
And it's so important that, you know, we can ask that question in a non-judgmental way and a caring, loving way. It takes a load of bricks off of their back.
Right.
Because they were having that thought. It's just like that young girl in the youth class several years ago. She said, I realized tonight my life is at risk. It was like a weight of bricks came off her back. You know, and the amazing thing today, she's 21 years old today, and we still stay in touch with her. My wife was She's in school, college today. My wife went up to North Carolina to go to a football game with her the other day.
Awesome.
And she's doing better. And so parents, please ask the question if you have any concerns at all. And even if you don't, ask them, you know, what about your friends? You know, have they ever told you that they've had thoughts of suicide?
Right.
And that's so important. We have to have open lines of communication.
Right. And not like so many parents do, sweep it under the rug and, you know, oh, you know, it'll take care of itself, and then it doesn't, you know.
Right.
And that's why these things to me are so intertwined, you know. They kind of go along together in some ways, because I have talked to several people that were getting abused, and they just wanted the abuse to stop, but they didn't feel safe enough that they could tell anybody, and they just wanted it to stop. Like they just, you know, and that was the only way out. And it's just really sad that was to happen. So as far as getting a professional involved, so say you ask your child, you know, have you ever had suicidal thoughts or whatever, you were able to get in contact. Now, I want to explain, because we're going to go to the end, at the end of the program, we're going to help, you know, share how we can get in contact with you and all that stuff. But explain a little bit about the training that you have and how parents can, once they hear, yeah, you know, if your child says, yeah, I have thought about suicide, I've had moments like that, and they're honest with you, then what do you do at that point?
Yeah, a program that I wrote several years ago is called Listen, Learn, Lead. And it's a model for intervention. We teach several models of intervention, but we've had really great success with Listen, Learn, Lead. And we teach parents to be listening to your kids.
Mm.
You know, one of the problems is parents a lot of times will say, you listen to me. Whoa, no, wait a minute. We got to listen to our kids too.
Yeah, you're right.
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, because they may not be adults, but they're little people. And we teach them respect by showing them respect as well.
Right.
And so we've got to be able to listen to people. And it's not just what you hear with your ears. It's what you feel with your gut. It's what you sense in your spirit. It's that spiritual gift of discernment, you know, listening to what the spirit is saying to your heart about what's going on with your kids.
Mm.
So you listen to them, and then you ask them the suicide question. Are you having thoughts of suicide? Have you ever thought about killing yourself? I don't ever say, have you ever thought about harming yourself? Because that's two different things. People are thinking about harming themselves are not necessarily thinking about suicide.
Right, right.
However, it can lead to suicide.
Right.
So I'm just right out there in front with it. And the reason being is because it reduces the stigma.
Mm.
If I have to make up words, and I was looking over your many of your podcasts, and I'm so grateful for that. I haven't had chance to listen to all of them yet, but we call the biological parts of our body by their real name.
Yeah,
we don't make up names.
Right.
And because what are we doing when we do that? We're not helping the situation. So be upfront.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ask the question, are you having thoughts of suicide?
Mm.
And that moves us into learning, and then we begin to learn, tell me more about that.
Right.
Tell me more about that.
Mm.
And then we got to validate the pain. You can't blow it off.
Yep.
Their world's not as big as our world, but that's their world.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you can't minimize it. You know, let's say a 14-year-old girl just broke up with her boyfriend, you know, and now that boy is suicidal. You don't go saying, well, there's more fish in the sea.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know what? That's his world.
Right, right.
And so we can't minimize it. We have to validate, say, that's got to be a painful thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can see that that's a painful thing for you. And so we listen to them. We understand where they're coming from, or we do the best we can to try to understand, and we validate the pain. And then the third part of that L3, listen, learn, you lead. You have to lead them to a place of safety.
Okay.
And the way you do that is by saying you can't just ask them if they've had thoughts of suicide. Mm-hmm. That's courageous if you do that, because most people won't ever do that. Mm-hmm. But you also have to lead them. And the way you lead them is by the lead answers the how.
Okay.
So you have to say, how have you ever thought about how you plan to do that?
Oh, wow.
If you've had those thoughts, do you have a plan? How would you do that? And, you know, if it's someone who is currently having thoughts of suicide, the other part of that is, have you thought about when you would do that? And, you know, if they haven't thought about how, good. We just go to the next part of the question on how, and that is, well, how can we keep you safe in the future?
Mm.
Okay. You know, if those thoughts do come back, how can we keep you safe in the future? And it's a we question. It's not a here's what you need to do question. It's a we question.
Right, right.
How can we keep you safe? Because you want them to buy into it.
Mm.
And they may say, well, I guess I need to tell you, you know, and they will feel like they can, because you're having that conversation with them in the first place.
Mm. Right.
So if you ever get to that point where you're having thoughts of suicide, please let me know.
Right.
Because everybody needs somebody to talk to. And when it comes to teenagers, I'm thankful that my boys had friends growing up. But when it came to the serious stuff, I would prefer that they came to me.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I would prefer that they came to me. I mean, there's a reason that God gave kids parents.
Right.
You know, and so that's what we want to build, a culture where our children can come to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the big takeaway for tonight. Let's build a culture where our kids can come to us.
Right.
And they feel safe to do it. And let's change the paradigm on what's happening, because here in the state of Georgia, I'll have to look at the rest of the, I've got ability to look at the rest of the nation, but I know for a fact in the state of Georgia, in the past 10 years, the suicide rate has just skyrocketed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the number two cause of death for teenagers. I've got to go out to Salt Lake City here in the next couple of months. The suicide rate in Salt Lake City, for anybody under the age of 24, is the number one cause of death.
Wow.
Number one. So there's a lot that we can take away from tonight, that, you know, it's we've got to build that culture of health where our kids feel safe to talk about these things that are tearing them up on the inside, emotionally and spiritually and even physically.
Right.
I think that is the parent's responsibility. You know, it's interesting. My oldest son and his wife, they spent the night with us this weekend. Forgive me, but we skipped on church, you know, because they were there. But we had church at home, and we watched a pastor online. After we got through, you know, I looked at my grandson, who's just a year old, and I challenged my son. You know, I said, right there in front of his wife, I said, how are you doing spiritually and leading the home? Mm-hmm. And he said, pretty good. And then I looked at his wife and I said, how do you feel about how he's leading the home? And she said, well, I think he could do better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was an eye opener.
Yeah, I bet.
And I said, here's, you know, I said, I'm so glad to be able to spend some time with my grandson. I want to just tell you guys, right now, you are his only hope.
Mm-hmm.
You are his only hope. And it was just really just a sweet time to be able to, you know, have one of those eye-opening conversations with my kids about the importance of what we're talking about. And I feel the same with this subject we're talking about tonight. We've got to be able to have those conversations. And if we don't, we continue to hide it in the darkness. We continue to sweep it under the rug. It's going to be little wonder that the suicide rate just continues to go up.
Right. Well, that's one thing I wanted to go into a little bit too, is that I truly believe, now there's not a lot of, there's data to back it up, but not like, you know, they're still kind of in the beginning stages. And this is one of the things that if I ever do my doctorate, I kind of want to concentrate on this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But the technology that kids are exposed to, especially on social media, has created depression, has created a lot of things that they didn't even realize. They think they're happy, but then they're not getting real conversations with people. It's a lot of it's online. A lot of girls look at other girls and then they just can't measure up. The technology of, you know, there's a Netflix special that came out that's all about, I haven't watched it all the way through, but it kind of like it made suicide, it brought it, you know, as a conversation. But it's just, there's a lot of like technology that's coming into that. So do you think, I believe that there's a factor in that, and I, you know, my kids are not going to have data, you know, smartphones or whatever until they get to the age where they can basically pay for it themselves. And and that might not be everybody's take. I understand that, and that's a different, you know, conversation. But do you see, I know that when I quit Facebook for about 4 months, I had a lot going on and I just decided to do it. I felt happier. I felt freer, all this kind of stuff. And if these kids have all these different mediums they're looking at and it creates that, well, I can never look like, that's got to impact their thoughts in themselves, which could lead to suicidal thoughts. Don't you think do you think there's a connection there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you hit it on the head. There's actually an app out there nowadays that there's several of them. You had Blue Well a few years ago. Then you had the Ugly Little Woman, Mamba or what, Mombo.
I heard about that. That was freaky.
It encourages young people to kill themselves. So it's a dangerous world. Mm. It's a dangerous world, electronically speaking.
Yeah.
And kids have access to pornography. They've got access to anything they want. And it's information overload, a brain that's not, you know, your brain's not fully developed until you're past your teens anyway.
Right.
And so the ability to make executive level decisions, rational decisions, is not there. And, that's why kids have higher incidences of car wrecks. It's not just the fact that, they're inexperienced. They don't have the capability of thinking through the consequences of their actions. And that's not to I'm not slapping them for that. I'm saying that that's just the reality. The prefrontal cortex is not fully formed. They're running off of the limbic system, the amygdalas, all the emotions involved in that. And they don't have the, when the emotions runs the, is in charge and not rational thinking, we're going to always have trouble. And so kids that are inundated with electronic gadgetry, it's overload.
Right.
And you do, and we have had children that have actually ended their life. You know, it's interesting. I've had people that say, well, if they're posting stuff on Facebook, they're not serious. Well, how much more serious can you be than to actually stream your own suicide online? That's happened. That's happened in our community. And so the stuff that's going on with the social media, I think it has, in fact, increased the risk factors for suicide. There was actually a young girl a few years ago that she cut her hair, long, beautiful hair, and she bobbed it, and her dad chastised her so bad on Facebook and social media that she ended up taking her life. So again, parents, wake up.
Wow.
Wake up. This is the world that they're living in. And you've got social media bullying. When I was a kid, when your dad was a kid, we could just go home and we had a refuge.
Right, right.
But today, kids go home, there's no such thing as a refuge because they can sit in their bedroom all alone and they can get bullied right there online.
Right.
Mm. And bullying greatly, substantially increases the risk of suicide. So we know that for a fact.
Wow. And with that, I just want to go back to that because that just completely blew my mind. So she bobbed her hair, he got so upset. So there might have been a connection where parents are, I mean, the kids are like striving for attention from their parents. They're not getting good attention, they're getting bad attention, but they want to somehow make their parent happy. And there may be a straw that breaks the camel's back to the point where they, you know, whatever that is, they're just like, I can't please my father. And then,
oh, absolutely.
You know, because there is a connection, because my kids want to make, I mean, they fight, they're like any other kids, but it is powerful when you watch your kids grow up and they do want to please you. So imagine a father or that is abusive to their kids, like that's got to completely change their whole thought process. And then it connects to a Netflix special that they watch, and then right. It connects to this and that. And then, you know, suicide comes on, and it's just this constant thought. I mean, I haven't heard a guy, some YouTuber guy that filmed somebody doing it. Like it's absurd to me.
That's right. And are you in the reference to Netflix, are you talking about 13 Reasons Why?
That's what it's called. Yeah. I haven't seen it, but I know that it kind of, what I've heard is that it kind of glamorized it in a way, but I could be completely wrong. You tell me, because you've probably seen it. With me being a student and three kids, I don't have a lot of time to watch Netflix like I could, but like, you know, tell some parents about this, that their kids can go on and watch it like right now. You know,
well, here's the interesting thing. I did not watch it. I didn't have a need to watch it. I knew what it was about.
Okay.
I read the premise on it, but I did, when it first came out a couple of years ago, I did write a piece on Facebook about it, and it got shared 100-something times. I had a radio station that called me and wanted to know what my take was. And basically what I said was, parents, be aware of this movie. Mm-hmm. And if your 13-year-old child is watching this show, then I'm not saying don't let him watch it, but if he is going to watch it, then you must watch it with him.
I see. Okay.
And the problem is, and I said this when I wrote the piece on Facebook, I said, the problem is, it's not that it's going to cause a child to be suicidal. The problem is the child who's watching it all by himself and is already suicidal. Mm. It could put him over the edge.
Right.
And sure enough, I believe that there's some instances out there that we've heard of over the past couple of years where that movie did do that for some people. I had a parent who said, you know, don't tell me what my kids should watch. My response was, then don't read my Facebook post. But I said, because what I'm not telling you what your kids should watch. I'm saying if they're going to watch it, you watch it with them.
Right.
And, you know, and it's like what I used to do with my boys when they were growing up, and Sherry, you know, she would question, are you really want to watch this with them? And I'm like, yeah, we're going to play a game. It's called Spy the Lie.
Mm.
And then that way they're not just watching it as entertainment.
Right.
But we would pause it and we would talk about, okay, what do you see here that's a lie?
Oh, that's cool.
What do we know about the truth? And we played that game, Spy the Lie.
Hmm.
And that way I could get away with watching a lot more stuff, you know, with the boys than maybe what Sherry would have wanted us to watch. But, you know, that's what I was saying about 13 Reasons Why. Just be aware of what your kids are watching.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they are in a state where they're having ideation towards suicide, it could, that program in my mind is going to increase the risk.
Right.
It's no different from alcohol. You know, we know for a fact that, and you say, well, teenagers don't have to worry about alcohol. You know, we've got to have our head in the sand if we don't think that.
Yeah. Right.
Because it doesn't matter. You know, here in the state of Georgia, the alcohol is illegally consumed at 21.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had to deal with teenage alcoholics. You know, and the thing with alcohol is, if alcohol is present in somebody who is suicidal, then their risk just went up 300%.
Mm.
And why is that? Well, look at what it does. It's a depressant, number one, and it's an inhibitor. You know, it reduces inhibition, number two. So if I'm having thoughts of suicide and all of a sudden I start drinking to drowned out my sorrows, I just increased my risk substantially. So, you know, 13 Reasons Why is the same thing.
Right.
There's several things out there that we can check and make sure our kids aren't involved in that can help reduce the risk.
Right. And so, I think parents also need to use some of this technology to be able to stay up on, you know, what the latest thing is. I mean, looking up stuff about suicide, you know, sexual abuse prevention, things like that. Like, parents need to look up and look on as many blogs as they can to know what their kids could, because if it's out there, their kids are probably involved in it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
if it's available. Absolutely. So as parents, we can't just act like that it's not there, because it's there. And TikTok is something that's climbing up on the charts that I do not like, and it's becoming like the thing. And I used the app for a while. I've talked about this several times, but TikTok is one of those things that is not good for teens big time because of
right.
how it promotes, and kids can get on there. Now, to kind of like tie it all up, and then we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, how people can get in contact with you after this. But I had one more. Is it okay if I ask you one more question?
Sure.
One thing I was thinking about is, if you have a parent or someone that is, you know, that their child had committed suicide, or their spouse or whatever, as a church family or as a family that comes around them in that situation, how can we best minister? Because I know that, and when I was going through our stuff of what happened to our kids, and we talked about this on the phone the other day, there's things mm-hmm. that you just don't say. There's things that you will never understand. You can't talk to a parent that has lost a child from suicide and look at them and say, I know what you're going through. Or
right.
like the cliches, you can't say that. You don't know what they're going, unless your child has committed suicide. Same thing with, you know, sexual abuse. Unless your child's been through it, you can't do that. And sometimes it's good. And I think there's similarities into that, but from your expertise, how would you help anybody around them, whether it be family or even a spouse, how would you help parents kind of get through that time?
When it's specifically related to suicide.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting because one of the things we do is postvention, and that's when we come in after the fact, after there's already been a suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that we do that is try to mitigate other suicides from happening, because suicide is a contagion. You know, back before I started doing this, one of my boys, when he was 16, one of his good friends took his life when he was 16. Well, the year before that, his older brother had taken his life. And then 2 years after that, the father took his life. So it was two boys
wow.
and their father took their life within a period of about 3 years.
Damn.
And so it is a contagion. And so we have to come in and mitigate that possibility through postvention methods that help to reduce the risk.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I do, what I would tell, like I was teaching in our home church, we're over in Sharpsburg now, so we go to a different church. But one of the things that I was sharing with the group Saturday is, after there's been a suicide, a lot of people don't know what to say, you know. And I've actually had some folks that they lost two sons to suicide. And they were out of church for a while, and then they went back to church on Easter Sunday after their son had died in January. And I knew that I was going to have to meet with them and do some counseling after that, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I would have chosen to go to church some other time other than, you know, on Easter for the first time back since your son died.
Right,
and
right.
So we sat down, and I said, you know, how did it go? And they said, well, you know, somebody said God needed his little angel.
Oh,
well,
my gosh.
Ugh. Don't say that. Don't say the cliches.
Yeah.
You know, somebody else said, well, you know, I'm glad you came back on Easter because God lost his son, too. And the dad said, yeah, but I think God got his son back 3 days later. Mine's been dead for, you know, 5 months. He's
right.
not coming back.
Right.
So we want to be careful about cliches, but one of the things that I, and because of that, because people want to be careful, sometimes they don't even go around. Sometimes they don't say anything.
Right, right.
You know, because they're so afraid of saying anything that might upset them. And so they just keep their mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can do that. That's called the ministry of presence. But, but at the same time, one of the things that I do, you know, especially when it's someone that I didn't know and I'm following up, maybe it's a veteran whose son died, and I didn't know him. But one of the things that I will do, let's just call his name Johnny. You know, I didn't know Johnny, and I'd like to get to know Johnny. Can you tell me a favorite memory that you have of him? And I just sit there. And it's neat because, you know, they'll think about it for a minute. But so often I'll have people tell me, thank you for saying his name.
Mm.
You know, it's just like people, it's like he'd never existed with a lot of people. They won't mention his name. And I need for people to mention his name. He's still part of my life, you know? And, so it's a healing process for them. Now, I did have a lady one time. I said, I didn't know your son. Please tell me, you know, a memory that you have so I could know him too. And she said, I didn't have any good memories. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. And then, but you know what happened is she began to open up about the struggles that she'd had. She had ended up in the hospital because of him. He beat her one time. He had some severe mental health issues, and he finally took his life. So I said, I'm so sorry. But a few minutes later, she came back, and she said, you know, I do have a good memory. But she said, I've got to go back to when he was 2 years old. And so I said, you know, thank you so much for sharing that with me. And I hope maybe that just remembering that one good memory can maybe help you a little bit. As you're processing everything as you're going through. So even in the very deepest, darkest relationships where it doesn't seem like there's any redeeming value in that relationship, she was able to find a glimmer of hope.
Right.
So that's some of the stuff that I do. But I encourage people who have lost loved ones to suicide, get involved in a suicide support group. There's a lot of them out there called SOS, Survivors of Suicide. And a survivor of suicide is not somebody who's tried to take their life. It's just like any other thing. You know, Grandpa Moses died of suicide. He survived by.
Okay.
You know, so survivors of suicide, those are people who have lost loved ones to suicide. And there's SOS groups out there that can help. And I think it's better than some of the other grieving type organizations. Like there's a lot of great ones, but with SOS specifically, that is specific to people who have lost loved ones to suicide.
Right.
Because sometimes people go to other grief support groups, and when they say my son died by suicide, all of a sudden they feel like they're in the center of the ring. And because there's so much stigma associated with it, and they need to be around people that have had some experience with that and are walking in that on that journey alongside them.
Right. And I think too, when you were talking about, and you told me this on the phone the other day, you said the ministry of presence. I think that's really powerful, because when I was going through my stuff, I wanted basically people to say, is there anything that you need? Or just when I was laying in the fetal position, crying my eyes out, doing whatever, it would just been nice to have friends. And we did. Our Sunday school class reached out, and a lot of them did this. But that just came and sat with us and put their arm around us and just didn't say anything, you know. And that's in the Bible, you know, when there's a time of grieving. And, you know, even though we didn't have a death, and I'm not comparing it at all to a suicide type situation, but it felt almost like a death when this happened to our kids, you know. And
absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So I just thought that that's a very powerful statement, the ministry of presence. I've never heard anybody say that before.
Well, it's something that that I learned several years ago in seminary myself. And so it's just an incredible way to be there with people, because so many times people feel like they have to say something when what is really needed is just your presence.
Right.
And that takes the burden off of you, really, as a caregiver. I don't have to say anything. I just got to be present. And I think that's what God wants from us. Don't worry. You know, it's even in the scripture. Don't worry about what you're going to say. Just be there.
Right.
You know, and God will give us the words we need to say when the time comes, if we are open to that wisdom through the Holy Spirit.
Amen. So good. Well, this is awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on. It's such an honor to be able to talk to you and the knowledge. And I've learned a lot from hearing you speak about stuff that I hadn't even realized. So you're adding value to my life, and you're adding value to everyone else that's listening. And can you tell me a little bit about, if people want to get in contact with you, what's the best way, you know, what your credentials are? Because you told me about all the different, you know, psychology and counseling courses that you have taken, that, this is a big professional thing, and I've been following it for a while, and it's amazing like how much it's grown since you've started it, you know. So
well, my personal website is chaplainken.com.
okay.
So you can hook up with me that way. I'm also on Facebook as Kenneth Lou Coon. My middle name is Lewis, so L-O-U. Some people call me Lou.
Okay.
But Kenneth Lou Coon, and that's the way I connect with a lot of people.
Okay.
And then our website is afmfamily.org. That stands for Armed Forces Mission.
Okay.
And I tell people up front, you know, don't let the armed forces part of it scare you away. We work with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my creed as a soldier says I serve the people of the United States of America. So it's not just soldiers.
Right.
I work with everybody, and I don't want anybody to die by suicide. And so, that's the name of our organization, Armed Forces Mission, at afmfamily.com or .org.
Okay.
We do the Listen, Learn, Lead suicide intervention workshops. We would love to come to any of the churches out there that might be listening. My heart is really, you know, we train a lot of law enforcement. We're training Homeland Security now and the U.S. Air Force and all of that. And I love that. I'm thankful for it. But my real heart is in training the churches. And I know just from years ago when I got my MDiv degree 35 years ago, I did not get any training in suicide intervention. And a lot of pastors don't have that training. A lot of pastors from big churches call me because they don't know what to do.
Mm.
My encouragement is, you know, give us a call, reach out to us, and we'll come to your church and do a training. And, you know, we just did one this past Saturday, start at 9 a.m., finish at 3 a.m., maybe bring in some Chick-fil-A, not 3 a.m., 3 p.m.,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a late night.
But, you know, it ends up being a six-hour class. It's 5 hours of instruction and a lot of simulation exercises that gives people the skills to make a difference. And, you know, the bottom line is we want to turn the tide on suicide. We want to see, you know, I believe we can eradicate suicide in our circles of influence. I can't do any. And the thing is, I can't do anything about suicide out in California. Let's say for example, on the Golden Gate Bridge, but I've got a friend out there who can, he's known as the guardian of the Golden Gate. He's done over 200 interventions on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Wow.
And so we're building a network of care, you know, so that within our spheres of influence, one of the things I say all the time, wherever I'm at, the thing is, This is applicable for what you do too, David, because one of the things that I say is wherever I'm at, that's the safest place you can be. Wherever I'm at, that's the safest place you can be. So people can feel safe to talk about suicide. They can feel safe, you know, and in your case, they can feel safe to talk to you about what has happened in their life, and how they were hurt, sexually. And so wherever I'm at, that's the safest place you can be. And if we can build a culture along that line and people start to buy into that as a creed for their own life, man, think about what that would do for our society for so many people out there that are hurting. Amen. So that's what we do. You know, I'm thankful for it. I feel like I've finally grown up. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And I just appreciate the time to spend with you this evening talking about the stuff that is really, really important.
That's awesome. Well, churches, if you hear out there, I know there's a lot of seminarians who listen to this podcast. Have Ken at your church. I think this is an amazing thing. Now, do you sell the products that you were talking about, the classes that you teach? Do you sell them separately, or is it better to do an in-person type class?
Well, I've actually got a book. It's called Listen, Learn, Lead. So you can order that book on Amazon, or you can call me and order it straight from me, and I'll send you a copy with my signature on it. Not that it's worth anything, but would love to hear from you personally. And we've got a book called Listen, Learn, Lead. And then the workshop itself is set up to be a 5-hour workshop, and it's based on the book. So with churches, you know, we if you can get 10 or 15 people in a room, we'll come and do a workshop. We've done workshops with as many as 200 people. The sweet spot's really anywhere from 30 to 50 people. Mm-hmm. And on a Saturday, or even, you know, breaking it down over a couple of nights, or a Sunday afternoon after regular church, have potluck dinner and let's run this thing for till 6 o'clock and knock it out. And get people trained. And the thing is, I mean, here's what I get excited about. If you can catch hold of what that model's all about, listen, learn, lead, it's not just a model for suicide intervention. Right, it's a model. Right. It's a model for toxic leadership. It's a model for working with your kids that have been sexually abused. Mm-hmm. It's a model for evangelism. Right. You know, I've had over 1,800 soldiers come to faith in Christ. And it's all based on this idea of, you know, just listen to them where they're at, learn from them, and then lead them to the place of hope. Amen. And I'm excited about what we're doing. I appreciate your time reaching out to me to reengage. It's always good to visit with you. I love you. I love your family and appreciate what you're doing now.
Well, thanks, man. And that's my dream eventually, too, is to do that sort of thing is, you know, raise awareness on the prevention of this stuff that I feel called to do with the sexual abuse by talking about, you know, phones, by talking about all these types of things that's going into churches, schools. But I'm kind of in the beginning stages, but I would love to, maybe we can do something together at some point.
Oh,
or
that'd
something.
Be fantastic.
I mean, that would be great. Because I'm sure, like I said, they overlap and now, I don't. It's probably different for every church, but is there a price involved when you go to someone's church, or is it just depends on the situation? Or,
well, it does depend on the situation, and I tell churches all the time, just give me a call, let's talk about it.
Okay.
Because it varies. Sometimes I'm able to get grants, faith-based grants, but there is a cost, and part of that cost actually helps to underwrite the rapid response program that we do.
Okay.
Because I've done over 1,100 suicide interventions, and we don't charge anybody to ever do an intervention. You know, if it's 3 o'clock in the morning, we've got a rapid response vehicle, and all of that costs money to be able to do that, and to be able to be of service to people 24/7, but we don't charge a dime for that. So, part of the underwriting of the workshops helps to underwrite the rapid response program that we do.
Now, is the program available in any state, or is it just in the state of Georgia, or like?
No, we can go anywhere. So I was actually in Texas last week. We're going to be up at training Chicago Fire here in the next couple of months.
Oh, wow.
We'll be out in Salt Lake City. We'll be down in Miami. We're going all over the country. Got to be out in California. So we go wherever, you know, wherever we can to help all we can, to train all we can so that they can save those they can.
Amen.
That's what I tell people all the time.
Now, the hotline or the intervention hotline, is there someone who, say, if they're in California and you're in Georgia, is there like a national hotline that someone can
call? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the national hotline, which I'm not part of the national hotline. I work with the Georgia Crisis and Access Line here in the state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. But the national line is 1-800-273-TALK.
Okay.
1-800-273-TALK. And that program is manned 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They take thousands of calls every week, and they are available to you so that nobody ever has to say, you know, I don't have anybody to talk to. There is always somebody to talk to.
Okay.
And so they just need to call 1-800-273-TALK, and they can get the help that they need. Sure can.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Mr. Ken, for coming on. Such a respect for you and what you're doing. I pray that God blesses your ministry and it just even blossoms even more than it already is, man.
Well, Davey, I appreciate you, brother, and you be sure to tell your family I said hello as well.
Oh, I'll do it. Thanks for coming on, and maybe I can help you on again in the future. And man, thanks again, and we'll talk at you later.
Okay, take care, brother.
Bye-bye. All right, bye.